Howdy, friends, and welcome into another edition of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of TCU Horned Frogs on SI. I'm your host, Just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native with very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. And I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andrus, the voice of KillerFrogs.com. This is episode 18 of our show covering TCU football and a smattering of other topics related. It is Monday, the 21st of October, at the time of this recording. And JD, the World Series is set. Dodgers, Yankees. I already know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think?
I'm excited to see Shohei Ohtani versus Giancarlo Stanton because Aaron Judge is a bum and doesn't play well in the postseason. Other than that, I'm enjoying my last 2 weeks of the Rangers being reigning World Series champions while I have it. I'll probably watch here and there, but I'll probably watch game one Friday night. Definitely won't watch Saturday because college football will be on, but I'll enjoy it while it's here, I guess.
Okay, a follow-up question before we get yelled at for not talking enough TCU football and more off-topic. Do you think this World Series is good for baseball with it being, the rivalry of the Yankees-Dodgers returning for the most glorious prize in all of sports? Or do you think last year Rangers-Diamondbacks, two markets that you don't really associate with baseball success, do you think that was better?
I think it's a catch-22, right? Obviously it's good for baseball because when the two biggest spenders are going to be in the World Series every year, it influences teams to want to spend more money. On the other hand, there's still owners that won't do it, and I hope this isn't a continued pattern we see, which history has said it isn't, so that doesn't worry me too much. But I like that it's number one versus number one. That's what I'll say. I don't care if it was, Nationals and the Astros. I want number one versus number one every single time. So I do like that it is Yankees Dodgers that way, but I don't like that it's like the two biggest payrolls.
That's a fair point. Fair point. All right, enough baseball. We've got more to talk about, and this is not the baseball show. We have a lot to talk about from this past week. But before we go into the one game that you really want to talk about, I'm going to start off and just say that this college football season is drunk. I am so tired of just the constant chaos that is going on in college football. Because I'm losing sleep. That's number one. But we see trash being thrown at DKR in Austin that changed a call from officials in the Texas-Georgia game. Vanderbilt beat Alabama a couple weeks ago. Vanderbilt's ranked. Army and Navy are undefeated. They're going to have back-to-back games. They're going to have the conference championship game and then their traditional game. Like this year is just crazy, and I'm actually getting tired. It's just ridiculous. And the one that irritated me the most is I stick my neck out and give Texas Tech Red Raider fans a break, which I never do, and then they go out and choke against Baylor like that. There's just so much going on, and it's been the entire season. What is going on?
I'm gonna give you a chance for redemption right now. I was gonna wait till the preview, but I want it now on video. Would you like to stick with your guns if that's what the Big 12 championship will be, or would you like to make a change?
No, I'm going to go ahead and make the change because now I do think, even though I hate it, how can you not say it's going to be BYU and Iowa State?
Cincinnati. Buy into the Bearcats.
I know that you're high on Cincinnati. You're very high on Cincinnati. You made that very clear this weekend. And that would be that would be cool to see. But, yeah, after what I saw, and I mean – by the way, correctly predicted on ESPN Radio in Utah that the Oklahoma State was a trap game for BYU, and they almost pulled it out. Same with Iowa State, almost choking against UCF. Honestly, I think with wake-up calls like that, I just don't see them losing again. So I know you're high on Cincinnati. I've got to just – they're the two top teams now, and I think that they're going to ride this next, 3-4 weeks. And they're going to be the ones in Arlington. So I'll take back what I said last week. I'm going to change it.
Thank you.
I was trying to say something for clickbait and something that I actually could see happening, and then this weekend happened, and it didn't. Yeah, that's not happening anymore. So I'll go back on that. But am I wrong? This year's insane.
No. It's one of those where like I don't really know what to expect any given weekend. Halfway through the Baylor Texas Tech game, I still don't know who I wanted to win more, because I dislike both programs so much. And also I didn't want you to be right about Texas Tech, and but I also didn't want Baylor to win.
You just don't want me to be right about anything ever.
No, I also think it's hilarious that I think
I
I believe that you said Dave Aranda would be the first coach fired, and
oh my gosh. Oh
he
my
might coach
Lord.
himself into an extension by the end of this year. Who knows?
He might. I think wait, but didn't I also say that if he won this game, if he won that game again, didn't I say something along those lines a
You
few weeks
said he was
ago?
going to get fired after the.
But I said if he beats Tech,
You said if he
I
beats
said
Tech,
something
they'll
that
let
if,
him ride out the end of the season.
okay, I'm still convinced of that. I still don't think
I
he'll
think
be
it comes
the,
down to next weekend's game against TCU, but.
and it probably will. That one I'm going to hold true to. I still don't think that when the 2025 season kicks off, Dave Aranda is the head coach of Baylor. I'm going to stick by that one. I stick by that one. Just looking around the country, I mean, Missouri needed a comeback against unranked Auburn. Auburn and Oklahoma appear to be the two worst teams in the SEC this year, which is shocking. Tennessee, Alabama was a good
Is it
the
shocking?
worst teams in the conference. I mean,
It
come on,
shocking?
Vanderbilt is surpassing expectations like
Look,
crazy.
I didn't think Vanderbilt would be the worst team because Diego Pavio was a dog at New Mexico State. A dog. And
Yeah.
so I thought he'd be enough that it's like he could inject enough juice.
Also tied in Eli Stowers for Vanderbilt, who was also good at New Mexico State. Den Geyer product, by the way. The Michigan lose to Illinois, that win for Texas, and now the loss of Georgia. Texas season isn't aging the way we thought it would.
Their best win is
What do you think about
Louisiana
that one?
Tech. Their best win is Louisiana Tech. Oklahoma, we all know. I'm not even going to beat you, not kick you while you're down, but like beating
You already
Oklahoma,
have several times. Don't even say that.
beating Oklahoma like the way they did was not impressive. And anyone who thought it was just wasn't watching ball close enough. Beating Michigan at home at the Big House, I'm sorry. I think TCU could beat Michigan again right now with how that team is playing. I just don't think that they've had any team. I'm gonna go ahead and say it right now that this is a definite trap game against Vanderbilt this weekend for Texas,
Oh, without
and
a
would
doubt.
not be surprised if they lose, especially with the rumors that there was a leak that Quinn Ewers might be sitting out this season, the rest of the season. Not gonna confirm nor deny or speculate, but it is something that has been circulating.
During your 90 seconds at the end of the show, I'm going to do a quick deep dive into that. I've got my browser already open here on my screen. Oh crap, I messed this up. Yeah, no, quick personal note though. Last night on Twitter, publicly, I stated that I was just so glad I wanted my week to be over. And as I'm getting into bed, my Twitter alerts start going off, and you have to deliver two more swift kicks to my gut as I'm going to bed to end my work week. Come on, you did not have to do me dirty. Don't say that you're not going to kick me when I'm down.
Whoa, wait. What did I put out last night?
It was when the Dodgers had an awful first inning against the Mets, at least top of the first inning,
Oh, yeah.
and I hated it. And I was like, I can already tell the Mets are going to win this game. Then
Yeah.
the Dodgers were up 5-1 in the third, and I tweeted, I said, the cold takes of the week continue, and I tagged you in it. And then I was like, one more jab, come on, get your jab in. I was inviting one more jab, and then like you doubled down when I finally I tweeted like, so glad the week's over, and he goes, oh, just, and you were
Oh
said
yeah,
something
I
like,
said you're
oh,
gonna
just
re
wait, I'm
yeah,
gonna,
you're gonna
yeah.
relive it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to go to bed, and you just had to remind me, oh, I'm gonna make you relive it. Oh,
Yeah, don't worry. I've got 90
talking
seconds today.
talking talking personal smack while I'm
Got
down. I'm tired.
90
Just wanted it
seconds
to be
today.
over. Just wanted it to be over. Well, all right, without further ado, let's get to the game that everyone actually wants us to talk about. And I never felt secure in that game at all, at any point. And what's crazy is I don't think Utah fans did either. I think that this game for both teams was spent on pins and needles. I mean, it looked to me like both teams were so desperate to not make mistakes. Both teams were basically playing not to lose.
It was the sloppiest yet the cleanest game I've ever seen in my life. Like, you pretty much captured it. Both teams were definitely playing not to lose, and they played that to perfection, but it was so sloppy in roundabout ways of how they got there. I mean, poor Isaac Wilson. He's every third throw he makes, he looks like he's legit, and then he goes back to being Isaac Wilson. Tons of credit to the TCU defense for finally being who I've preached over and over that they could be if they just got off the field on third down, and we finally see what happens when they do. And Nolan, real quick, if I had told you before the Houston game that TCU's defense would get a team's offensive coordinator fired, would you have believed me?
Wait, rephrase that. What?
Like, if I had told you before the Houston game that TCU's defense would play so well that they would get a team's offensive coordinator fired, would you have believed that statement?
No,
But they
not at
did.
all.
But they did. I mean, I it wasn't because of TCU's defense primarily, but I side note, bad firing on Kyle Whittingham's part,
Oh, yeah.
and I don't agree with it. But yeah, TCU's defense played exceptionally well, and that's the main product of this game is that the offense was stagnant the entire game. They came out the gates, they drove the ball completely down the field. Josh Hoover fumbles in the red zone, and turns the ball over. Defense makes a stop, and then you drive back down the field and you get a field goal blocked. It was the sloppiest start to a game I've seen since maybe the SMU game. Maybe the Houston game. I don't know. There's a lot of sloppy starts with this team, and it seems to be in continued trend that this team just loves playing on their heels. And it's a weird thing to see. TCU defense got a lot of reinforcements this week. They had Shad Banks. They got Max Carroll back. They finally got guys that they needed, and it showed on the field. Caleb Ewlarms or Johnny Hodges at the middle linebacker position, they're not going to show up on the stat sheet lighting it up, but they were fantastic flying around everywhere. Devin Diaw had the best game of his life. Two sacks. He was, I think he had seven QB pressures on the game, like just absurd numbers. And it seems like, I know we talked about it last time after the Houston game, that Nnamdi Obiazor said that a lot of the guys were still trying to grasp the defensive scheme and the concept. And it seemed like they finally grasped it. Like, we didn't really see like a busted coverage or a blitz that hits the wrong gap and a run breaks free from 20 plus yards. Like, it finally looked like this was the defense that people were assuming would be here at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at the beginning of the season, had you told me going in that we were only going to give up 7 points to Utah, I would have thought you were crazy. That actually leads me to my next question. So, I mean, 71-yard pass from Isaac Wilson to Money Parks, shout out Alito. Did you get a little worried that that may have been a spark with how much time remaining? Like, that's 21 minutes remaining of game time. Did you have any fear at all that that would cause a spark?
No, because that's kind of a given, right? Like, you're never gonna, like, Sonny Dykes talked about it during the second week of the season when they held Long Island University to scoreless. It is so tough to hold a team to 0 points completely. At that point, Utah had not ran more than two plays in TCU's territory. There was no reason for me to be worried. The only thing that worried me was going into prevent defense or a bad turnover in our own side. And we didn't see prevent defense. And yeah, while the offense wasn't fantastic and what you expect, they didn't turn the ball over when they couldn't. Like, they just went three and out. I'd much rather three and out than forcing a ball where it shouldn't be.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Kyle Liverman led the team in points and total points, scoring seven by himself. The other six coming from a Josh Hoover on the sneak right before halftime. Or actually not even right before halftime. There's still a good portion of that second quarter to be played. How worried are you about the offense? I mean, Savion Williams was our leading rusher. Seven carries for
I was gonna
72 yards.
ask, I have a question.
Okay.
What do you think about Savion being RB1 and you run Eric McAllister, Jack Best, JPR?
I didn't hate it, honestly. I really didn't hate it. It's interesting, especially just because he hasn't been the force in the slot on these over the middle passes that we thought he was going to be at the beginning of the season. We saw a glimpse of it against UCF. I mean, we've seen little glimpses of it here and there, but I mean, if you're not going to play your clear number one actual running back in Jeremy Payne, you're going to drop him down the depth chart, which we talked about last week. I mean, that's a good shakeup. I mean, it's something different. It's something worth trying. I didn't hate it. I
Now,
genuinely didn't hate it.
with that said, I love Cam Cook. I'm a big believer in Cam Cook and what he's going to do for this team. But he had the most rushing attempts on the team. 9 attempts for 13 yards, 1.4 yards per average rush. We can't do it anymore. We saw Trent Battle back. Trent Battle, who was fresh off an injury, 8 for 45, 5.6 yard average. He had the third highest pass blocking rate on the entire team. That's what he brought to not only through rushing, but through pass attempts. And Josh Hoover was pressured a lot. Could you imagine if Trent Battle wasn't in at that time? The Savion having more, having the most rushing yards is not indicative of what it actually is. It's a formation that Utah had never seen. No one had seen. And
Right.
it worked when it worked. And it was nice, but I still think Trent Battle was the best running back there. I don't know what's going on. I mean, Hoover was 22 for 41. He had some bad missed throws. Looking at the JPR pass over the middle, that who knows, JPR might still be running if he catches that one. But there were times that it just looked like players were on the wrong page. Like, Josh Hoover went to go throw, it looked like a little seam route to Jack Besh, who was running a 5 yard curl. Like, there was just no multiple times that they weren't on the same page. And I don't know what it is. Nolan, you know how I feel about this, so I'm gonna ask you and let you talk about it first. Haas Haney, we saw him come in, change of pace
Yeah.
quarterback.
I'm still going to be a believer that that could be a good shakeup. But it's what you said during the game in our chat that it's all about the timing in which you bring him in to run that formation. And I thought that we did a poor job at that. I genuinely did. I did not like the timing of when he came in. Yeah,
I
you
get it.
bring
I get it on a third and two, like we brought him in late, right? Like
right.
maybe switch it up, but like he hasn't even shown that Briles will let him throw the ball. Like he is, defenses are starting to key in on the fact that it's either the running back or him. It's a read option.
Well, that's because he's played six snaps and it's been the option
Yeah,
every single
I
time.
know. That's what I'm
So
saying.
I think that's more in Briles' head. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't now granted I'm not seeing practice. I don't know what Haas is looking like behind the closed doors, but I totally agree with him coming in and running that. Look, I'm all for if he never throws a pass this season, I'm fine with it. I'm really fine with it.
My biggest issue is we're wasting a redshirt opportunity for him to get one or two rushes per game
That's
for
true.
less than 5 yards. And we have
Yeah.
two young quarterbacks already on the roster. Like
Yeah.
we are burning a redshirt year for nothing.
Yeah. And
That's my
a
biggest
commit
issue
coming
with it.
in. And a
Yeah.
commit coming in next year.
That is my biggest
Who,
issue
by the
with
way,
this.
is tearing it up this year
Yeah.
in 3A.
Yeah.
We can talk about that a different time.
But that's just my main my. First of all, my biggest issue, and we just talked about it, was that we bring him in at the worst times. Like if it's a fourth and short, or it's a third and short at a critical time in the game, like we kind of saw in the fourth quarter, hey, I'm fine with it. Why are we bringing him in on a second down opportunity while we're in the middle of a drive and Josh Hoover just completed three passes?
Right. That's my problem. And I agree with that problem right there. And I literally thought the same thing before you sent that chat that on Saturday night. I literally said that was not the time to use that at
Yeah,
all. At all.
you're
If you need a
throwing your offense
spark,
out of a rhythm.
Right. If you need a spark, or if you need 2 yards and you have two plays to do it, fine. But not when Hoover just completed two passes for a total of 35 yards and you're driving down the field in a good rhythm.
Yeah.
That's going to kill a drive, especially because the defense is, much to your point, they know it's coming. And so he's going to get swallowed up in the backfield, right? Now,
Yeah.
until we can actually figure out, hey, he needs 2 yards. Well, then when it's 2 yards, the defense is definitely going to cheat up, and Haas is going to know what to do in that situation. And I firmly believe, and it's in that situation where he might break 125 yards. We don't know, because we're probably not going to see it. But yeah, I love the kid, and I always will. But I'm with you. We're burning a potential redshirt year for him to sit here, learn the system for a little bit, and he could be a very good future quarterback for us. And we're doing it just to get a few rushing yards on first down, and what ends up being a drive killer. I'm totally with you on this point, 100%.
But that's the whole theme of why the offense struggled this week, why the offense struggled against Houston. They can't find a rhythm. At times, when the pass blocking is great, the run blocking is not there. When the run blocking is there, the pass blocking is not there. The two blocking groups cannot coincide right now. And another part of it, and there's another rotation that's happening, and it's Ben Taylor Whitfield and Mike Nichols are rotating in and out. You don't rotate your offensive line. I'm sorry. Unless there's a health issue happening,
Yeah,
then yeah,
you need
maybe
a
you need to
set
save it.
starting five.
But there are so many series where I'm looking and I'm keyed into the right tackle first to see who's there because you don't know. I think it's just like, but that's the underlying theme. There's no consistency. There's it, Nolan, what's more likely to happen the rest of the season? The defense continues this upward trend that they've been on, or the offense continues their downward trend?
Oh, between those two being more likely?
Yeah.
Okay, just because I'm gonna make a point. So you asked this question at a good time, because I'm about to make a point that I thought was really encouraging with the offense. I will say it's more likely that the defense is going to continue this upward trend, especially with, I mean, this strong of a performance after coming out of a bye week. That was exactly what we needed defensively, and it seemed like I mean, granted, Utah's offense is not the greatest offense we've faced all year, and they're not the greatest offense we have remaining on the schedule. That's a gimme. But on the offensive side, I will say that what I saw that was encouraging for me this week was how much we were spreading the ball around in the air. Eric McAllister only had two receptions, but they went for 57 yards. And my friend, who actually is also named Nolan, I was watching the game with him, and he looked at me and said, "We've got to get the ball to McAllister more." And I said, "I completely agree. Every time McAllister touches the ball, some kind of magic is happening." JP Richardson, three catches for 56 yards. Jack Besh, three catches for 46. Drake Dabney finally got three catches, 39 yards. And that was something that I didn't get to say when I went on ESPN last Friday, because it was in my mind before I went on that show. I said, if they ask me what I want to see, I'm going to tell them I want to see us use our tight ends more. And so I was very glad to see Drake Dabney get those three catches for 39 yards. Savion still had five catches for 27. Despite having a bigger day in the run game, I really, really was encouraged by how we were spreading the ball around in the air, and I hope that we continue that trend. And if we continue that trend, then I don't think the offense is going to be trending downward much longer. So I'll say all that tied in. I'm glad you asked that question. It tied into the point I wanted to make. So yeah, I think it's more likely that we're going to see the defense continue to get better. But it's still I see what your fear is, and that this offense, it's very likely could just keep going down.
Isaac Wilson and Josh Hoover have very similar stats from this weekend's game, by the way. I don't know if you know
Yeah, I
that.
saw it.
It is. I mean, it's a coin flip. Like, we are yet to see a game where the offense and defense can both play well together. And I don't know if we're going to. The offense, faces a Tech defense who, hey, it's a turnstile. Like you're gonna score, hopefully, but you also better score because they're gonna score too. Like, and I don't know how much confidence I have in that right now. I think your point of you love that the ball is being spread around is actually hurting. Like it's a catch 22, right? Like there is no number one target. Because if you key in on Jack Besh because he's been going off all season, guess what? The freak of nature Savion is right there. And you try to cover both of them and leave, JPR on a with a slot corner, like he's gonna burn him. And I think there's just too many mouths to feed that it's like there's not like a true read on anything right now. And I think it's kind of a bigger issue than it is a helpful thing.
It can be, especially with how, my critique, and I try not to blame this on the quarterback every time, especially in college football. In NFL, I blame the quarterback a lot more, but in college football, there are instances where the play caller, whether it's the offensive coordinator or the head coach, will tell you, don't even look for through your progression. You're going through the ball here, and interceptions happen that way. A lot of interceptions happen that way, and so, yeah, I think that's a good point because I my critique about Josh Hoover and how he reads his progressions, and sometimes he just doesn't. Sometimes he's probably just told this is where the ball needs to go, and so you're right. It's a catch 22. It could go either way.
With that said,
I.
though, Josh Hoover, he took a lot more checkdowns this week compared to what we've seen. Like, he is taking the turnover
Yeah.
situation very seriously. And which, by the way, if you think Josh Hoover has a turnover problem, I'm sorry, he really doesn't. He turns the on just dropbacks alone, he turns the ball over less than 3% of the time. That doesn't include his rushing attempts, that doesn't include handoffs. He turns the ball over less than 3% of the time. The offense runs a lot of plays, and a lot of his interceptions came from trying to force things because they can't run the ball. Like, yeah, fumbles are an issue, but what are you going to do? You can't go to anyone else, and you shouldn't. Josh Hoover is your guy. He's already ninth in school history in passing yards. So, what are you going to do?
Well, we have broken down this game.
Oh,
We went
one
around.
last thing. And
Go ahead.
this is really, really what I wanted to talk about with this game. Nolan, there was a drive that happened in the fourth quarter in this game. 14:44 to go. TCU hadn't driven the ball very well at all in the entire second half.
I'm not gonna lie, I may have already been asleep by that point, but I'm listening.
There was a drive, 14:44 on the clock. TCU still winning 13-7. First and 10 on the TCU 33. Or T on the TCU 3. Josh Hoover finds Jack Besh for completion for 30 yards. TCU first and 10 on their own 33 still. Trent Battle rushes up the middle. Or Savion Williams gets a direct snap, runs the ball. It's on Utah's 42 now. First down. They're moving the chains. First and 10. Trent Battle rush up the middle for a gain of 8 yards to Utah's 34. Second and 2. Josh Hoover incomplete pass to Eric McAllister. It's the pass is broken up. There's 12:38 left on the clock. TCU calls a timeout. Their first timeout of the half burned. They got two left. 12:38 on the clock. They're driving. It's a 3rd and 2. Take your time. You're on Utah's 34. Hosseini comes in on a 3rd and 2. Low snap. Not entirely his fault. Loses 2 yards. Now you're looking at a 4th and 4. Josh Hoover comes back in. Josh Hoover's out of rhythm. They have to burn their second timeout of the game now. 11:55 on the clock. All right, you know what? We call two timeouts. We're going for it. You get a delay of game. Now, the ball's from Utah's 36 to Utah's 41. 11:55 on the clock, and now you got to punt the ball. You burn two timeouts. Threw the offense out of the rhythm driving the field. And just all that just to punt the ball? What are we doing? That is such coaching malpractice on that series alone.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God TCU won the game because that would have been the entire talking point of the game. I tweeted about it then. I saw other people tweeting about it, like Jamie Plunkett, saying like, "You can't do that." I don't care if TCU wins the game or not. That is all I have been able to think about is that this is week after week after week that we have seen some coaching blunder happen, and it was this in this week's game. What are we doing? You can't waste two timeouts just to punt the ball. In a one possession game, I don't get it. Like it's a miracle it didn't come back to bite them.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. I haven't been fond of a lot of coaches this year, and thankfully one of the ones I'm not fond of is gone and no longer in Norman, Oklahoma, but I'll save that for another show with another publication. Well, JD, we have talked about the game that everyone wanted us to talk about. I think we got some good points in. We got some good discussions in. We went around the country, and now you get 90 seconds to even more kick me while I'm down. Are you really going to do that to me, or did you have, or were you just seeing how I'd react, and you actually have something else in mind?
Give me my 90 seconds.
All right. Here we go. On the clock, 90 seconds starting now.
Picture this. You're in a nice football stadium. You're enjoying the time with your friends. All of a sudden, call doesn't go your way. You hear daddy's money start talking in the background, and then you see a beer can fly past you, right past your right shoulder. You go, "Whoa, what are we doing, guys?" You see more beer cans fall. And then you go, "You know what? I'll throw my beer can." And then even more. And then now you got a head coach of your favorite team that you picked up a shirt from in Walmart because you didn't go there or like them for the last 10 years. And now, next thing you know, you're handed everything you want because you threw a fit. If that doesn't capture what the entire University of Texas is, then I don't know what does. They're a bunch of crybabies who just got their way because they threw a big enough fit. And I'm so glad that I got to see social media react and say, "Wow, Texas, you guys, like, why would you do this? You're awful people." And it's like, yeah. In the SEC, it just means more, I guess. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. That was an awful showing by your fan base because you had a call go wrong and an awful showing on the SEC to be like, "You know what?" It's like when you were a kid and you throw a fit and your mom was having a bad day and she's just like, "You know what? Here's what you want." That's what happened. There's no discipline. It's a joke. Texas is now thinking that they could just throw the trash, throw a fit for whatever they want, and get whatever they want their way. And in the corner, you got little brother Oklahoma who has to fire their offensive
All right,
coordinator because nothing
time.
can go
I'm
their
actually not
way.
kidding. You're out of time. You're out of time. I gave you a few extra seconds because I liked where that was going. As soon as you said Oklahoma, I'm cutting you off. You went. You went over.
I
You
try to
already went
time it
over 90
right.
seconds.
I
You
try to
already
time
went
it
over 90
right.
seconds. By the way, Pete Thamel, senior writer at ESPN, reporting that the rumor about Quinn Ewers is not true. He was at practice today and is, quote, focused on Vanderbilt.
Is Quinn Ewers real? People are
Well,
talking.
I mean, look, I gotta say, I gotta be honest. I was, yeah, that cat scares me. I'm pulling for that guy. I've liked him ever since he was at South Lake Carroll, and I don't like a lot that comes out of South Lake Carroll. But oh, by the way, funny story about Brock Boyd. So I get to go watch South Lake Carroll last Thursday against Justin Northwest, which pretty much the de facto district championship. Carroll hands Northwest a massive loss. Go talk to head coach Riley Dodge at South Lake Carroll, and I ask him about Brock Boyd, committed to TCU. Honestly, a great wide receiver talent, had a great game, looked fantastic. And Riley Dodge says he does really well in practice every week. I can't make this up.
You just gave me PTSD.
I literally can't make it up. And in the back of my mind, I said, man, Sonny's really gonna like him then.
You think that's how we recruit at TCU? Like, you just call the coach and you're like, "How is he in practice, coach?" He's like, "Really great in practice, but he hasn't played well." Like, you know what, coach? You've said enough. Really good practices. Thank you.
Well, we're gonna wrap this up, but JD, we got another show that starts next week. Why don't you tell the people about it?
Yes, we have the men's basketball podcast. The next episode, a second episode, will be released on Wednesday. They will be breaking down a lot of the information that will be shared from Men's Basketball Media Days that is in Kansas City this week. They, I mean, it's a really great show led by Davis Wilson and Nick Garamanti. So you need some basketball coverage before the season starts in around like 2 weeks. Then go over there, type in Frog Fever through the Killer Frogs podcast on Spotify and Apple Music, or through the website itself. It'll be there, listed under Frog Fever. So give them a listen.
All right, y'all be sure to check that out as we get ready to start another season here for another sport at TCU Horned Frogs on SI. Frog fans, that does it for the 18th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, however you find your podcast. We'll see you next week with it. Well, actually later this week, so we can preview our game with Texas Tech. And until then, for my partner JD Andrus and everybody at Killer Frogs, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Sucks to be OU.